WMFO Medford, 91.5 FM. It is The Big Picture. Derek Gary and Lisa Nichols with you until 9 o'clock tonight. 855-915-9636 is the telephone number. 855-915-WMFO. Walk it into your phone. Dial us up. We love to hear from our listeners. And coming up later tonight, we're going to be talking about automation, immigration, and the American worker as seen through the lens of what is happening in wine country out in California. Very, very interesting story that appeared in the Los Angeles Times that may provide some insight into Donald Trump's policies and the outcomes of those policies. So stick around. We're going to get into that later. Plus our favorite things from the past week, the strangest stories from the past week, and the ongoing quest for spring, I think.
Yeah.
Really needs to be a topic at this point.
It actually
where spring is.
Officially spring, and if anybody's been outside today, it doesn't feel like it. It wasn't as bad as it has been the past couple days. I saw sun today.
Still plenty of wind turds out there.
Big yellow thing in the sky.
The wind turds are getting smaller, but there's still a lot of wind turds around.
Yeah.
Isn't there supposed to be a lamb around somewhere?
I was just mentioning to you, I'm actually supposed to be going to, well, I am going to a wedding on Saturday. It's outdoors.
Fun, yeah.
And I heard it's going to snow.
Yeah, they weren't expecting this when they were planning that a year ago.
Yeah. I'm sure you're going to fill us in later in the show on the weather, but...
Yeah. Yeah, snow. It's not good.
Snow, number below 50 degrees, yeah. I have banned from this broadcast. Unfortunately, you keep breaking that new rule that I have set, but...
It's not even going to be 50 for opening day, kids. So, spring. Yeah. Where's the lamb? Where is this lamb I keep hearing about?
Yeah, have fun with your frozen Bud Light.
It's supposed to be...
your Bud Light slushes.
It's supposed to be in like a lion, out like a lamb. Where is the freaking lamb? You know where the lamb is? The lamb is buried under the wind turds. Somewhere there is a wind turd with a lamb in it. We got to find that. We got to let the lamb out so we can have some freaking spring.
Didn't they actually find some lambs back a couple years ago when all that snow melted in Southie?
I don't know.
Some sort of animals.
Oh, did they?
Yeah, they found, yeah.
I don't think they were still alive.
No.
Yeah.
No.
I find big rocks in the snow at the bottom of the driveway every now and again. But
yeah, that's after your tire goes over them.
No, that's after the snowblower blows up trying to go over them. That's how that goes. Lisa Nichols, what do we got going on?
Other than
world?
Your troubles continually with the snowblower. In local news, we learn misleading banks must pay the fine. Santander's subprime auto lending division will pay $26 million to settle allegations that it provided unfair high-interest loans to car buyers. They knew they could not repay them, repeating a pattern of mortgage lenders in the run-up to the last housing bust. Massachusetts Attorney General Mara Healey and Delaware Attorney General General Matthew Dean announced a settlement with Santander Consumer USA Holding Inc. Wednesday. Massachusetts will receive $22 million and Delaware will receive $4 million. This marks the first settlement in the country over how financial institution packaged subprime auto loan into securities and resold them to investors. However, several agencies, including the U.S. Department of Justice, have launched their own investigations into the practice and have issued subpoenas to institutions, including Santander and General Motors Financial co-regulators in New York, and also have been investigating Santander's auto lending business for potential predatory lending.
Can we throw some of these bankers in jail?
Yeah, you never like to hear the predatory. After years of combating abuses from subprime mortgage lenders, these practices unfortunately are familiar, Healey said in a statement. Quote, Santander is a leading player in the business of packaging and reselling subprime auto loans, funded unfair and unaffordable auto loans, end quote. Not a good look.
No, it's not a good look. And they ought to be...
I mean, this is... And I bring this up for a local story because, of course, we are the main target for this. And I mentioned Delaware being the other state that is involved. Mara Healey really is on the forefront of pushing forward this. And out of the $26 million that Santander has to pay back, $22 million is going to the state of Massachusetts.
But here's problem number one. Oh, a $26 million fine means somebody's going to lose like 0.5% of their bonus this year. You know, that's not a fine.
Yeah. Well, subprime auto loans are made to consumers with substandard credit scores.
So is everybody in Massachusetts, apparently.
Or limited credit histories, which are usually poor, so you're looking in the 500 credit score lower. And, of course, they typically carry higher interest rates. In some cases, you know, consumers can be left owing thousands of dollars on a loan for a car that's only worth a couple hundred dollars.
And that's fine, because if the way that banking works, the more risk you take, the higher
and
the interest rate.
These loans obviously are riskier for investors, but offer potential higher returns for them. So, of course, they want to do this.
Now it's
and unfortunately, they take advantage of the system.
It sucks if you have a bad credit history and you can't find a cosigner, because that means you're going to get stuck with one of these ridiculous interest rates.
Yes.
But that's the way it goes, okay? If I, as a banker, am going to lend you money, I am going to determine the likelihood of you paying it back. The less likely you are to pay it back, the higher the interest rate I'm going to charge.
Of course.
And the reason I'm going to do that is so that whatever you do pay me back cuts into my losses over time.
Mm-hmm. Now, you know, I am a really strong believer of personal responsibility and not spending past your means. So understanding that you do walk into a bank with the expectations of getting a loan and understanding what you can afford, unfortunately here, and in knowing what people's debts are across the country, people purchase things more than they can afford. I mean, even looking at the housing
That's sort of a separate situation here, though. I mean, because we're talking about the poor. Okay, we're talking about people that are barely getting by.
Mm-hmm. No, and I'm not saying that I'm not putting blame on the banks, because the problem is with this is this, you know, quote unquote predatory part. And essentially, loan applications are very complex. And for the average person, if we're talking about poor, maybe undereducated.
Not necessarily.
I'm saying.
I'm not going there.
No. I'm saying maybe.
There are educated people who can't figure out what's in those forms.
Oh,
so let's.
No, I'm one of those people.
I don't.
No, but I'm saying maybe.
I don't want to make this a case of it's the banks preying on the dumb people, because we're not. We're talking about people.
I'm not classifying all poor people are dumb.
Yeah, but I just take that out of it, because we're talking about people who have bad credit. Okay, you can have bad credit for a lot of reasons. You never had any credit. You've got a low-paying job. You've got bankruptcy.
Look at the financial market right now and seeing, as I mentioned, we're coming off of a huge problem in the mortgage industry and how many people lost their homes during this, because you had banks that were doing these high interest rates and saying, no, we're going to give you all this money, knowing that there was no way that these people could pay it back.
But keep in mind.
And then look where it got us.
Keep in mind, the banks were doing that because they could flip those mortgages and make money on them.
Of course.
As an investment. And then they could turn around and invest in those pools of mortgages. If you, what's the movie that came out that,
I know you're talking about.
It was
nominated.
A year ago, it was nominated for Best Picture. It's a great movie.
They discussed it on the show.
They break down exactly what these guys do.
Mm-hmm.
And what was going on in the industry at that point in time. And one of the best scenes in it is one of these investors or one of the guys who's investigating what's going on is talking to a stripper. And she's talking about the three houses that she owns.
Mm-hmm.
That's because she was told she's going to make money off of this whole thing. That's what was going on with that.
Well, and of course, too.
This is just straight up abuse.
Bad credit, but understanding the daily routine that you have, and it is a necessity for some people that don't live in an area of public transportation, or the necessity to have a vehicle to get to work, go to medical appointments, or whatnot.
The older I get, the more socialist I seem to get, because I'm supporting single-payer healthcare, first of all. I believe, and I believed for a long time, actually, that we need, in the same way that we have a federal program to help first-time home buyers, we need a federal program to help people buy a car, where there is a federal guarantee that comes in place if you have limited credit, if you have limited income, so that people who need cars can get them. Now, the environmentalists hate this because cars ruin the planet. But practically, a lot of people in a lot of parts of this country need cars.
Mm-hmm.
In Boston, you need a car just to say, I have a car. You may never drive it, but you need it.
Yeah, you pay a couple $100 to park it in your high-rise in the seaport.
Yeah, exactly.
It, you know, I mean, it's a combination of things. It just shows that when you have these banks that take advantage of consumers, which happens in a lot of markets, and of course, the obvious is the housing market, but then you see it into something smaller.
But
as doing a basic loan, and you have...
But you know why the banks keep doing this?
Because they get away with it.
Because they get a $26 million fine.
Yep.
And what should happen is when the bank walks in and says, well, okay, we'll pay a $26 million fine, the AG, the Attorney General, turns around and says, okay, who's going to prison for 10 years?
Mm-hmm.
Because then they're going to be like, whoa, nobody's going to prison. Okay, we want $250 million fine.
What was the story that we covered a couple months ago?
That's your choice. $250 million fine, or we're going to put some people in jail.
Mm-hmm.
That'll calm them down real quick.
There was a story that we covered a few months ago, and it was it Wells Fargo?
Yeah.
And
it was making the fake accounts for everybody and destroying people's credit ratings.
Mm-hmm. And this is what's happening. And so many times we say, and we stop on this show, why is nobody being held accountable for it? And why is our government allowing for this to happen? I get it, and I'm giving you praises, Mar Healy, for being on the forefront of this, but there needs to be action. You can't just get a slap on the wrist for taking advantage of not only consumers, but it's illegal, essentially.
This is the equivalent of our attorneys general saying, don't get caught next time. They're not saying...
I see what you're doing.
They're not saying stop doing
that.
Don't
do it again. Mm-hmm.
It's like getting a speeding ticket, okay? Only the difference is, if you get enough speeding tickets, sooner or later they take your license away. Nobody's taking the bank's license away. The bank gets to keep doing what they're doing. And they're going to keep doing what they're doing because there is no legal incentive for them not to. And when they get caught, they pay some piddling fine. Nobody goes to jail. And the next day they're back at work, either coming up with a new scam or doing the same thing all over again.
Which, of course, to you and I, an average person, $26 million is a very large amount. But for these banks that are bringing in millions and millions of dollars every quarter, it's nothing.
It's a number that looks good in the papers because the people are uneducated. Go look up how much Santander Bank is worth and then see how much damage $26 million is going to do to them. The answer is... none.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely none.
And people will continue to be screwed.
Yep. In national news, the Great Recession is over, according to John Williams, head of the Federal Reserve Bank of San Francisco. Calling the current environment a, quote, Goldilocks economy, end quote, Williams told a group of economists that economic recovery has been achieved, citing full employment and inflation near the Fed's target rate of 2%. Williams did say the economy needs to grow at a stronger rate, which has been stuck below 2% since 2009. So, if you've got 3% annual economic growth, coupled with everything else that's going on right now, you got a pretty darn good economy.
Mm-hmm.
The unemployment is down. Even in the best of times, the unemployment rate is around 5%. That's just the way it goes.
You know, the Fed raised short-term interest rates. It's now set at, what, 1%?
Yes.
And I wonder if that's a good enough level considering where we are economically, and you were just giving some numbers. But whatever I consider the economy, I do get a little leery of what's going to be happening in the future. And I think the Fed is behind the curve on a lot of this because essentially what we've been sitting under the 2% for how many years now?
Nine.
To me, that's a little slow.
China's growth has been cut severely, but China, which has been the big growth engine of the world, was popping up around 18-19% annually. And when you have one country that's, especially a country the size of China, that's growing at that rate, it is going to put a drag on the growth of every other country on the planet.
Mm-hmm.
Europe has not seen much growth at all. Brazil, we know, has been contracting for the last several years. Russia has been contracting for the last several years. So it's all relative. Is this the kind of, you know, boom economy that we saw in the early 1970s, in the early 1980s, post-World War II? Absolutely not. Compared to what we've been through recently, is this good? Yes, it is.
Mm-hmm.
And really, Williams is saying, we're going to keep raising interest rates. Because the feeling at the Fed is that low interest rates are not a barrier to economic growth, which they probably are not at this point in time.
So is that a positive?
That is a positive, because the situation that we were in with 0% interest rates meant that if the economy started to recede again, if you go back into recession, there's nothing the government can do.
Mm-hmm.
The more that you can raise interest rates, and ideally you want to get interest rates up somewhere around 3, 4, 5%, not only do you make bonds more attractive, so that you're bringing investment dollars into the United States, but you also give yourself room to maneuver in the event that there is damage to the economy and you start to go into a recession. You can cut the interest rate by a percentage point, and suddenly that gets people excited again.
Now, seeing where we are economically right now, then, in your opinion, where do you see how much time in between we start raising it? I mean, they're not raising it by 1% every single time.
No, they're going
it's
up.
It's at a smaller increment, but
they're going up by quarters and halves. We're likely going to see two more interest rate increases this year. I don't think we're going to see one at the spring meeting, which is coming up in the not too distant future.
So we're going to stand still at 1%.
I do think the fall and winter meetings in the third and fourth quarter of this year, we're going to see those interest rates go up again.
See, now, in my opinion, I feel like the Feds could have pushed the gradual increase a little bit sooner than they have.
Well, a lot of people had been arguing that for 3 or 4 years, depending on who you talk to.
Just, yeah.
You know, that by the time we got to 2012, 2013, why are we still printing money and propping up the economy with these low interest rates when there are signs of growth?
Mm-hmm.
And the problem was the growth is less than 2%. And you want to try and get growth into the, you know, 4%, 3.5% to 4% range before you raise the interest rate.
Yeah, because essentially we haven't seen a down market in what, 50 weeks now?
Yeah.
Pretty good.
Yeah.
And seeing where our economy could be and where it is going.
Yeah, it's actually, so for all the doom and gloom that we've had, the economy is actually doing okay right now. Tomorrow could be a different story, but right now, we're okay. We're good. There's some good news. We haven't had any of that. I believe. The Democrats, of course, believe that the Russians are meddling in our economy. So that's the damper on the whole thing.
Mm-hmm. Now, just with regards to interest rates, what importance do they have on most in our everyday lives?
Well, everything that you buy from the person on your own personal level, everything that you buy on credit is affected by those interest rates.
Yes.
Car loans are affected by those interest rates. Mortgages are affected by those interest rates. Your credit card may be affected by those interest rates. You've got to look at the fine print and see if you've got one of those cards that adjusts its rate based on whatever the interest rate is.
Now, when it says fixed interest rate, that's when it changes.
Whatever you locked in. So,
yep.
So when I bought my house a year and a half ago, mm-hmm. Interest rates were at historic lows. So I bought in before the interest rate hike, which means I'm paying 0.75% less than somebody who bought yesterday.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll be up to like 1.5% less than somebody who buys at the end of this year.
So essentially it's better to buy when the interest rates are lower.
That's one of the reasons you drop the interest rates, is because when the Fed drops interest rates, people go buy houses.
Of course.
And when people buy houses,
raises
it gets
consumer
the economy.
Confidence and yeah.
It raises consumer need. Mm-hmm. You know, people start spending money on home improvements and items for their home and things like that. It's sort of the basis of how it works. Now, the other side of it is the business side, which is corporate loans are governed by the same interest rates as everything else. So when interest rates go up, it becomes more expensive for corporations to borrow money to buy goods, to pay their employees, to invest in real estate, whatever they're doing.
Which in turn could raise prices of consumer goods.
Which does have the effect of raising prices on consumer goods.
Or loss of jobs.
Correct. But inflation has actually been below the historic average of 3% since the Great Recession.
Now, interest rates and inflation are connected.
They are. But they're connected in a variety of strange ways. Mm-hmm. There isn't a direct relationship where the Fed
if
raises interest.
If one goes up, one goes down. It's
correct.
Not like that.
But if inflation starts getting out of hand, you can lower interest rates as a means of keeping it in check. And if we had gotten into a situation...
It's like a safety net.
Yeah, if we'd gotten into a situation a few years ago when interest rates were at zero and inflation had started going out of control, we would have been doomed.
Mm-hmm.
Because the Fed can't do anything at that point.
And there's no way that you could actually, for an average person, buy anything.
Japan actually experimented with negative interest rates.
I remember covering that, yes.
And we talked about that. I don't know if that's still going on or not, but it happened around the start of the year.
And just refresh my memory with how
basically,
what that meant.
Basically, you were paying the Japanese government for all of the money that you had sitting in a bank.
Which is crazy.
So instead of
weren't putting money into the bank.
Right. Instead of getting 0.5%, you know, for loan interest, they were taking 0.5% away mm-hmm. from the money that was there. And this was basically Japan's government saying, stop, you know, Abenomics, stop stockpiling money, go invest in things, please do something. And the Japanese businesses are still sitting there saying, yeah, no, we don't like the climate.
So, I don't think that would ever happen here in the United States.
It could have.
You think?
There was a possibility that we could have gone there, and the possibility was discussed a couple of times over the last few years, but nothing ever got out of control enough that it had to be done.
Now, if inflation went up too high, would that be a possibility to have negative interest rates to kind of even it out?
If you were at a 0% interest rate, yes.
Mm-hmm.
But really, nobody wants to do that. Nobody wants to do that because...
So this is something that we want and something that we need.
It's economically dangerous. Yes. What you want, believe it or not, is high interest rates. You want high interest. High interest rates are good. But interest rates around 4% or 5% are good. They got up to 20% before Ronald Reagan was elected, which is part of the reason Ronald
really?
Reagan was elected, is because the interest rate was around 20% in this country. Yeah. And nobody could afford to buy anything.
I was just going to say, how did anybody buy anything?
Yeah, nobody did. And there was a terrible recession going on, and the interest rates weren't helping matters any, and the corporate taxes weren't helping matters any, and Ronald Reagan came in and in one term fixed all of that. Which is why people on the Republican side look at him and say, that's one of the greatest presidents ever. It's why business owners love Ronald Reagan. Okay, you can talk about his social policies and Star Wars and the rest of it all day long. The reality is the guy got the economy working again.
Yes.
And later tonight, we're going to talk about what's happening with the job situation out in California. And we're going to talk about how some changes out there have the job market working again the way it's supposed to be. And that'll be interesting, so stick around for that. In world news, Brexit began today as British Prime Minister Theresa May handed a letter to EU Council President Donald Tusk that triggered Article 50 of the Lisbon Treaty. This starts a negotiation process that must be completed within 2 years and cannot be stopped unless all members of the European Union agree. The United Kingdom is the first country ever to undergo the process, which is expected to be contentious on both sides. Top issues will include trade, with the United Kingdom seeking to maintain access to the EU's single market, and the sharing of security information. So it is Brexit Day. Happy Brexit Day.
Oh, Brexit.
Today I am a country, I think, is what the United Kingdom said. Oh, I've been a country before. Everybody's sort of playing nice right now.
Mm-hmm.
The gloves will come off soon.
And of course, and we've discussed this on the show and talking about what really are the pros and cons with Brexit. And I think when it first came out, it was really Britain taking a stand and saying, not to the exact tone that America had and making America great again and in that nationalistic attitude. But essentially, that's what it was. It was
get
like
stuffed continent is yeah. pretty much what they said.
You know, they said we're done with following all those EU rules
yep.
and we're leaving.
Yep.
The people of Britain voted and surprisingly voted for Brexit.
Did the Russians meddle in that vote?
Probably. Maybe. Hmm. Is there going to be a investigation on that one too?
I don't know.
In my opinion, I think first and foremost, the British economy will become stronger because of this. You know, consensus among different sources is different, but the economic establishment that Brexit would weaken the UK, I don't think is true.
You can't, and I've said this before, you can't undo London as a global financial hub. You can't do it.
They're always going to be.
Because the infrastructure all points there. Now, what gets interesting on that side of things is you now have a situation where the scoundrels could come in and basically turn London into anything that they want.
Now, I've heard that with the Brexit, obviously, financial markets are, you know, kind of all up in arms. There has been notice of currency devaluation.
Yeah.
And a lot of people in the business industry have said that the devaluing of the currency has actually helped the export market.
Well, it does, because if you devalue the currency, then it becomes cheaper to import those goods, and cheaper goods sell more.
Which is another positive.
Yes. That may not continue to be the case going forward. The downside of it is it hurts the profits of English companies, but if you're selling more goods, in theory, you can make up for that. We're getting into vagaries of economics here that are best left to a classroom. The reality is it's going to go up. It's going to go down. The resilience of the United Kingdom economy is going to be tested. Because there are investors who are going to make big bets in favor of it, and there are investors who are going to make big bets against it. And now everything that everybody says is under a microscope. Every negotiation is under a microscope. The ideal outcome here is that the United Kingdom somehow manages to maintain its place in the single economy in Europe, while having the freedom to negotiate trade deals elsewhere in the world.
But companies are still investing. What was it? Qatar put in 5 billion euros into the country?
Yeah, well, the United Kingdom by itself has 68 million people.
Mm-hmm.
So that by itself is a viable market.
I think especially dealing with Britain, the economy is still growing essentially here.
Yes.
Like in the United States, we were in a down slump. It is still growing and it is going to get back to where it is. And I think you have that same situation in Britain where, of course, some jobs, some industries will be lost, but I think they're going to come out slightly ahead.
Time will tell. They've certainly proven in the past that they can be an economic powerhouse. On par with countries like the United States, like Germany, like China. Whether or not the United Kingdom can get back up to those levels is a great big question mark. That they could do better on their own away from the European Union is pretty indisputable. Because now you don't have Greece's debt hanging over your head. Now you don't have Spain's debt hanging over your head. Now you don't have secessionist movements in Italy and France and Spain and other places to contend with. You do have your own secessionist movement in Scotland.
How many times in just this segment in world news have we brought up the mishaps of the European Union and what's going on? Whether we're talking about Germany, Greece, Italy, it's a hot mess right now.
But England is... The United Kingdom, I keep calling it England, and I shouldn't. The United Kingdom has always had one foot in, one foot out.
Mm-hmm.
They've never been a 100% all-in member of the European Union. They kept the pound sterling, which annoyed the European Union to no end.
The power that had over it. I mean, look at when Scotland wanted to exit. One of the biggest things was that they were still using the pound.
Yeah. Europe wanted the United Kingdom in the European Union much more than the United Kingdom ever wanted to be in the European Union. So
they were put in there by default. They joined by default, but didn't want to follow all the rules.
The thing, now, the European Union would not have been established were it not for the inclusion of the United Kingdom. Because the United Kingdom added a level of economic desirability to the project. And it also added some balance. Otherwise, the only real economic superpower that you have in that union is Germany. And there were a number of countries in Europe that were reluctant to enter into a relationship where Germany held the balance of power. I don't know why. Mm-hmm. It's not like the Germans have done bad things with power in the past. But that was part of the reason why Europe wanted the United Kingdom. The other part of it was they all wanted to sell to the United Kingdom. They all wanted to buy from the United Kingdom. Industrial powerhouse. Mm-hmm. Banking powerhouse. Investment powerhouse.
Many, many reasons why this is happening in the UK wants to get out of the EU. But one of the big questions in talking about financial markets and trade is what is going to happen with trade between Britain and the European Union? Because we were seeing numbers that what exports were sitting at like 45% from the EU. This is down, I think, from 55% a decade ago. And don't get me wrong, you're probably going to see it being dropped down into 35-30%, which is going to be a hit to the financial markets, but are they going to be exporting to other places? Is there going to be more freedom for them to do that?
Well, the export situation becomes a yes and no, because a decline in exports does not mean a decline in sales. It could just mean that you're selling more within the European Union and less outside. And depending on the sector that you're dealing with, that could be a good or a bad thing.
But is the European Union going to make it so difficult for Britain?
This is the big question.
If you're in the position of the European Union, of course you want the financial markets of England.
Yes.
Because they have all the monies. They have a lot of monies, and they are a big player in that game. But then you have a situation of saying, wait a minute, they left us. They don't want to be a part of us. We're going to now make it so difficult for you to import and export.
There is certainly a bit of personal tension that is going to come to play in all of this. Whether or not that turns into bad policy is another question. Because as much as there are hurt feelings surrounding this, and as much as certain people within the European Council right now may be threatening this or that about the future of the relationship with the United Kingdom, nobody is going to enter into a deal that is bad for them.
Of course.
Strictly to punish somebody. You don't do it. It's bad business. It's bad politics. And those who do it wind up paying the price for it very quickly, and then it gets undone.
And ultimately, you might see Britain falling into having a lower tax rate or lower regulation standards.
Yeah, well, I don't think we're getting rid of that. I don't think we're getting rid of regulation in the United Kingdom anytime soon. Not as long as the civil service is around. They thrive on regulation over there. It's their favorite thing. But you know, in terms of interest rates and the functioning of their economy, they're going to be free to chart their own course. They could just turn their back on the European Union and say, you know what, we don't need you. We're just going to sell everything to America and Canada, and you guys go kick rocks. Mm-hmm. Practically, they're not going to do that, because from a logistic perspective, it is cheaper to sell United Kingdom goods in Europe, particularly in places like France and Belgium, than it is in the United States.
And I think for most average people to think, okay, well, Britain voted yes for Brexit. It's easy, you know, you wash your hands and you're done, bye. But this whole divorce is going to happen over a long period of time. And it is incredibly complex. So complex that there's many things that I don't even understand about it.
There are things about this that nobody understands because it's never been done. So we're in a brave new world with this. 2 years. Maybe sooner. We'll see what comes out on the other side of this. This is WMFO Medford.
Today in sports, we learned Vegas is letting it all roll on a new football team. The Oakland Raiders will move to Las Vegas after gardening enough votes from NFL owners on Monday to relocate to Southern Nevada. The Raiders received 31 of 32 votes to approve the move. Only 24 votes were needed. Quote, I have mixed feelings and it is bittersweet, Raiders owner Mark Davis said after the announcement was made on Monday. Quote, I understand Oakland Raider fans will be disappointed. I want them to know that I do understand that it's emotional. Raider Nation is the greatest fan base in the world and we're going to build something to make them proud, end quote. The Miami Dolphins were the only team to vote against the move, with the Raiders' proposed 65,000-seat dome stadium, which will be shared by University of Nevada, Las Vegas, will not expect it to be open till 2020. Davis told ESPN he plans on staying in Oakland for the next two seasons. A team holds a pair of one-year option of the Oakland Alameda County Coliseum. So, it's happening.
750 million reasons to come to Las Vegas. I guess the new phrase now is what happens in the black hole stays in the black hole.
Mm-hmm.
If you're the Oakland Raiders.
We brought this up a few months ago when I feel like it was actually back in early fall during football season, and we were hearing this being proposed. There was speculation over the past actual 2 years. And one of the things that really stuck with me that you had mentioned, there's a reason why there aren't sports teams in Vegas. It's not because, you know, it's too hot outside for football teams or baseball teams to play. I mean, nobody wants to watch baseball outdoors anyways in July in Vegas. But it is a sports betting hub.
Yes.
And that becomes a little tricky when you're dealing with a home team.
There is a rule surrounding this. There is no gambling in the stadium.
Mm-hmm.
So once you walk through the stadium doors, you can't gamble. That means no slot machines. That means no book. That means no keno, no video poker. No, there isn't going to be any window where you can bet on the outcome of the game. If you want to bet...
In Vegas, every basic square inch of land is covered by some sort of slot machine.
But you know what? There's going to be a casino next door where you can go and place your bet and then go watch the game.
Yes.
You know? I think it's a win-win. I think it's a good idea that you're not going to have any gambling in the stadium itself because that allows you to keep your purity,
mm-hmm.
to maintain the integrity of the shield, as Roger Goodell loves to do. And I think it's good that we're getting one of the NFL teams out of California because there were too many of them there right
debate.
Now.
And San Diego being one of them wanted to move out.
Yeah.
And what was the other team out here that wanted to move to Vegas? Was it Detroit?
It was Jacksonville, I think.
Okay.
That was one of the teams that was like in flux.
There were many teams that were sort of vying for the position to go to Vegas. I do agree. I think it's going to be great because that is going to be another draw for people to go to Vegas. I get it. Maybe you're not into gambling, but seeing a football game in Vegas, it has some sort of excitement to it.
Well, for the Raider fans still in Los Angeles, and there are some still left out there.
An hour and a half drive?
You can drive that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you could actually go to a game, and it's the same thing as people...
Being in New Hampshire or Maine.
Yeah, people from Martha's Vineyard or Portland who go to New England Patriots games.
Mm-hmm.
It once or twice a year, I'll do a three-hour round trip to go see a football game. So that's good. Plus, you got everybody who's in town in Vegas partying anyway. I think it's going to work because it is going to be a huge draw for fans of visiting teams to go and see a game in Vegas. That New Year's Eve game or whatever game happens after Christmas is going to be sellout every single
huge.
Year. All you got to do is make sure it's a home game. They will sell that out every single
mm-hmm.
year. The problem with it, potentially, is the Raiders aren't really going to have any kind of a home field advantage. Because you're going to walk into the stadium every week and it's going to be fans of the other team. So it kind of puts a little pressure on you to go out and win.
That's my first instinct, of course.
Yeah, you got to cultivate a fan base mm-hmm. while you're doing this.
I mean, I don't know how many football fans you have in the central Las Vegas area, but it is. That is going to be a prize ticket for even you being such a huge Patriots fan. You're more likely now to go to a game in Vegas because... hey, you can go gamble and see a football game.
Here's the deal. I leave on Friday night. Okay, it's a 1 o'clock. It's a 4 o'clock game out in Vegas.
You can take the red eye home.
I leave here on Friday night after work. I go stay at a hotel in Vegas. Spend all day Saturday partying and gambling. Sunday, wake up, party and gamble some more. Go to a football game. Take the red eye home. I'm back at work on Monday.
Mm-hmm.
There's people doing that now anyway. Without football involved.
It's like an extended Super Bowl party.
Yeah,
but you have said it before, and I've completely agreed with you in saying, once you have one team biting the bullet and going in, you are now going to have MLB wants to get in there, NBA. I believe NBA and the NHL are going to be the next one of the two.
You need an arena that you do not have right now.
Mm-hmm.
It's more likely that you get a Major League Baseball team moving in there because you can play baseball in a football stadium.
And you do not want to be outside.
If that's going to happen, well,
it has to be indoors.
Yeah. If that's going to happen, that has to happen soon. Somebody has to make that call. And I don't think that's going to happen. They're going to be sharing the stadium with the University of Las Vegas football team.
Mm-hmm.
So the stadium is going to make money. It's still $750 million of taxpayer money that nobody's ever going to see again, which is why Stephen Ross of the Miami Dolphins was the one abstaining vote. The NFL wanted a 32-0 vote. Stephen Ross said no. And part of the reason Stephen Ross said no is because he tried to get public financing out of Miami for his stadium, and Miami said no. So he turned around and paid for it himself.
Mm-hmm.
He can do that. He's one of the richest people in the world. The Raiders don't have that luxury. They desperately needed the public funding in order to get a better stadium, and nobody was coming to bail out that stadium in Oakland.
Now, if you were a resident in the general Las Vegas area, so whether you're talking about Henderson or any of the communities around it, you are now going to be having to fit the bill for this.
I don't know if Henderson going to be paying for this? Is Reno going to be paying for this?
I would assume that it is in the general.
I think it might just be Vegas itself.
Really?
And
I mean, hey, you put together five of the casinos, throw in $20 million that they're bringing in, what, $150 million every single weekend?
If you're Vegas, what you do is you make it all tourist taxes. You make it all occupancy tax, hotel tax, taxi tax, meals tax, all things like that. So that you're getting a little extra money out of everybody that comes in, and that pays for your stadium.
Mm-hmm.
So that you're not hitting homeowners. Make no mistake, they're probably going to try and find a way to hit the homeowners too. Because if there's what, I may be jaded in thinking this, but if there's one thing politicians love, it's tax money.
Mm-hmm.
They can't get enough.
But talking about it, having an arena that could fit a basketball team or a hockey team, I guarantee you are going to see one of the larger casino operators opening one.
I don't know that they've got the money for that right now.
Mm.
Because their business is suffering.
It's a draw.
So, millennials don't like casinos.
Really?
Yeah.
I still haven't been to Vegas. Maybe now I'll go see a football game. In food news, we learned we have a fake news problem here in the United States, and China has a fake food problem. Counterfeit soy sauce, rice, and eggs are among the potentially deadly items found for sale. Now, Alibaba, the nation's top online company, wants to fight back against fake foods by using blockchain, the tech behind Bitcoin. Jack Ma's $270 billion e-commerce firm today announced that it is going to begin experimenting with blockchain, a digital ledger system that's sort of a giant global spreadsheet to track genuine food products through the supply chain. The idea is that vendors on Alibaba's Taobao and Tmall marketplaces, with collective 443 million active shoppers, will be able to verify the authenticity of items using the system, therefore squeezing out the fakes. The blockchain system will be piloted in Australia and New Zealand, two popular sources of food products for Alibaba's Chinese customers. Alibaba has repeatedly been criticized over the years for struggling to eliminate fake items from bootleg DVDs to knockoff designer handbags sold by third-party vendors. China's second richest tech boss this month, called for China to toughen laws and penalties against counterfeiting. Quote, because counterfeiting is such a low-risk crime, it is hard to imagine how we can effectively rid society of counterfeit goods, he wrote on social media and continued, we need to fight counterfeits in the same way we fight drunk driving. For example, if there is a penalty for even one fake product manufactured or sold that was a 7-day prison sentence, the world would look at it very differently.
What was I saying about the bankers earlier? You throw them in jail and you solve the problem?
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, to begin with, China needs something called intellectual property rights law, which they lack.
Yes.
Because in China, it's never been a big deal. Somebody makes something, okay, I'll make that too. And there is no copyright.
And the head of this company actually said that too. This is both in terms for intellectual property enforcement and food and drug safety.
Yeah.
Now, back in January, there was this huge... Many articles coming out, but lots of coverage on this production hub that apparently turned out counterfeit seasoning that was designed to look like salt. We'll come to find out in this salt that they've been manufacturing and selling to very cheap, so it's going to a lot of the lower end restaurants in China, but also some of it was being exported. It was found out initially they didn't know if it was being exported, and
of course
it was.
It is.
And it was containing deadly toxins.
Of course it is.
I'm not saying if you have, you know, a little dash of it, but if you start using it in mass production,
yeah,
not good.
Yeah, counterfeit food.
Yeah.
Leave it to the Chinese.
And also around 50 factories and what the media called dangerous ingredients. So again, industrial salt, different food colorings, food additives. Last week we talked about the situation in Brazil with the meat. And once again, we see a country that because of the standards and what is allowed by the government, and I do have to praise, there's a lot of things that get by here in America, but you are not going to see a situation that's happening like what it is in Brazil with the meat, what is happening with these products in China. There is strict regulations
yeah.
here that have, you know, standards
you can,
to sell and manufacture products.
You really can't get adulterated product into the U.S. food chain. You really can't do it. Because...
No, and I'm saying with regards to...
The officials aren't for sale in the first
FDA,
place.
The FDA, they're having issues with salmonella contamination.
The FDA...
That sort of thing.
The FDA has come up short on tracking down the sources of some of these E. coli salmonella outbreaks and on punishing the people responsible for mm-hmm. them.
No, of course. And there's a huge difference between, you know, a machine in a factory that happened to burst open and you may be getting
right.
metal fragments in your mac and cheese compared to what is going on in Brazil, where you have government, you know, racketeering and money
yeah,
laundering
exactly.
and bribery to pass off old meat. Bad cuts and food that can taint consumers.
There are a lot of things in the United States that don't work, but the Food and Drug Administration actually is one of the things that does.
Of course. I mean, look at the situation with the Kind bars, and they were saying you can't say that they're healthy
yeah.
because they're above, you know, 7 fat grams.
But it goes beyond that, because every time you hear about a food recall, the Food and Drug Administration is involved in that somehow. Mm-hmm. And there's a whole mechanism in place where somebody gets sick or somebody finds glass, you know, in a bag of flour, and suddenly everything gets recalled. Other countries don't do that. Other countries are just like, oh, the consumers will take the glass out before they use it.
Mm-hmm.
And then somebody is in the emergency room because they ate a cake that was full of glass.
Yeah. And of course, our media is the first ones to be on top of it, and because we have to tell people about the recalls. And there have been times where I sit on this show with you and said, like, how does this happen all the time?
Yeah.
How are there mass amounts of E. coli, salmonella, and whatnot?
Because we actually have a government agency that works and does its job.
Stuff happens.
Yeah.
And luckily, here in the United States, we do know about these things.
Yeah. And given that they...
But hey, in China, there's no regulations. They're making factory salt.
If you get sick from eating something in China, the government response is going to be, well, you shouldn't have eaten that. And that's it. And you're on your own. In the United States, it's going to be, well, wait a minute. Where did you get that? Give us the package. Who else has got this stuff? Would you like to sue somebody? And the would you like to sue somebody part, maybe we take a little bit too far in this country, but compared to what's going on in China, be thankful that we've got it. In technology news, Samsung unveiled its Galaxy S8 phone today, which will be on sale April 21st for a mere $750. Among its features, security via iris scanning, as well as facial recognition that opens the phone when it sees you, Bixby, Samsung's version of Siri and Cortana, a 5.8-inch screen, and a headphone jack, which the new iPhone conspicuously lacks. The phone can dock to work... The phone can dock to work with a mouse and keyboard and can be charged wirelessly through a pad accessory. No word on how often it bursts into flames. We're assuming they don't.
Yeah, maybe these phones will actually be
allowed
on an airplane.
Yeah. So it's got a headphone jack, so you can keep using your headphones without having to buy separate $250 earbuds, which is a nice gesture by the Samsung people.
Yeah.
Because I just gave you all my money for the damn phone, and I can't... there's actually going to be a version with an even bigger screen than that. So we're getting back into phablet territory with these things.
And that's funny because so many people used to make fun of me with my old Samsung. I now have moved on to an iPhone. But it was pretty big. It wasn't a tablet, but it was...
But there's some interesting things that are happening. One of the interesting things about this is the dock. And this doesn't come with it. It's an accessory. But during the demonstration today, they had it plugged into a dock in an office, and somebody was using a mouse and a keyboard with it. Which means, in theory, depending on what applications become available for it, it could become a sort of portable office for you. And one of the big problems that everybody has, you know, in the business world working with smartphones is sitting there and typing out messages by hand.
Mm-hmm.
That's why the BlackBerry people love the BlackBerries. They trained themselves to use those keyboards, and they were as good on those keyboards as they were on a regular keyboard.
It's true.
With the smartphones, with the smooth screens, it's a problem.
Mm-hmm.
Even for those of us who can handle like a BlackBerry keyboard, the smooth screen is like, I don't know what I'm pressing here.
Well, especially here, you know, in the time that we live in now, everything is so connected. So even if you sign on to your phone... I know Samsung does do this with their Androids. To even get into the phone, you need to have a Google account. Everything is all then hooked up to that. So it goes into your documents. I have a Google computer, so I can run all of that through my phone with the email. And essentially, it's just like another version of the cloud for iPhone. All your pictures can be saved in there. All your videos can be saved in there. And it's crazy to think how everything is connected, but it does make it more convenient.
But it's also the idea of having an all-in-one device so that I'm not switching back and forth between different devices all day long.
Mm-hmm.
One of the things that, and really what you need is for that to plug into the dock and then work with your regular monitor so that I'm basically using my smartphone as the CPU for all of my office things and charging it at the same time. Because this is sort of what Nintendo did with the Switch,
mm-hmm.
which is, it's a portable gaming system, yes, but you can just plug it into a dock and then play it on your TV. It's a brilliant idea. It's poorly executed at this point.
Now, have they figured out issues with the battery? Are they going to... Because, I mean, essentially, this is the product that is going to have to bring Samsung back on the map and get away from exploding phones.
The story... The other Samsung story that came up this past week is that they're going to be selling the refurbished Note 7s somewhere. They haven't said where. But apparently, they've refurbished some of the Note 7s and they're going to sell them.
See, this whole concept about refurbished, I hate, because I am with T-Mobile, and I was, at the time, paying for a brand new Samsung Galaxy 6. That all of a sudden just died.
Yeah.
And they say, oh, this thing happens all the time. So you have the expectation that you are going to get a brand new phone because you are still paying for it. Where in reality, they send you a refurbished phone, play it off like it's a new phone. Like, that is insane to me because essentially you're paying for a used car.
Yeah.
Or you're paying for a new car, but you have a used car. That's crazy.
Yeah.
And they're like, oh, well, refurbish is just like new.
Well,
but it's not.
In the case of the Note 7s, I think we can assume that refurbished means they've changed the batteries in them and that hopefully they have batteries that don't burst into flames now.
And got a new manufacturer of them.
But we'll find out when those go on sale. If you're looking for the new Samsung Galaxy S8, April 21st, something to do with your tax refund, go get a new phone. Where is the... Well, you know what? I know where it is. It's over here.
Don't know why.
It wasn't playing because we don't want to hear about any more cold weather.
Stormy weather.
Snow. Damnable.
Told you that word was banned.
Damnable snow is in our forecast. Once again, happy April, everybody. We've issued an all points bulletin for the lamb. Please find the lamb. We need the lamb because this is not pretty. Tonight, lows around freezing, partly cloudy skies, might be a little bit of flurry activity depending on where you happen to be. Tomorrow, we're going to have sun. Enjoy that while it lasts. Highs in the mid-40s, lows in the mid-30s tomorrow. Friday is when the fun begins. It'll be cloudy during the day, and then rain starts in the afternoon, turns to snow, heavy plowable snow, late afternoon, early evening, particularly north of the Massachusetts Turnpike, which includes us here in Medford. Highs will get up around the mid-30s on Friday. Lows around freezing Friday night. Snow continues into Saturday morning. The winds pick up. Wind gusts up to 25 miles an hour. Highs in the upper 30s. Lows around freezing on Saturday. The snow should clear out on Saturday morning. So at least you got Saturday to clean up. And then on Sunday, mostly cloudy. High of 50. Lows around freezing Sunday night. And for opening day, it'll be sunny. Very little chance of precipitation, 10% chance of rain, high of 48.
Not that bad.
Lows in the mid-30s. So if you're going to the Red Sox game on Monday, kids, wear a parka, is what I'm saying. Wear a parka and watch out for the ice, although we might get rid of a lot of the ice on Sunday. The one good thing that we can say is that the temperatures support rapid melting at this time of the year. The bad thing that we can say is snow, damnable snow. And when we come back, did you hear all the other stories that caught our attention here on WMFO Medford?
Rare, medium, well done. Cooking meat is not a time to play guessing games. You can ruin the flavor of a tender piece of meat by overcooking. The best way to be sure the meat is cooked the way you like it is to use a meat thermometer. Before you place the meat in the oven, insert the thermometer so the bulb is in the center of the thickest part of the meat, making sure that it doesn't touch bone or fat. When the thermometer reaches a few degrees below the desired temperature, remove the meat from the oven and allow it to sit 15 to 30 minutes. It will continue to cook to the desired doneness and it'll be easier to carve. This is Sarah Beck, Consumer Meat Specialist with the U.S. Department of Agriculture. To make sure you start with the best possible piece of meat for the way you're going to use it, write for more free information on meat buying. Write How to Buy Meat, Agriculture Radio, Washington, D.C., 20250.
I'm going to the hardware store.
Oh, will you pick up 800 lumen bulbs?
800 more flowers? The neighbors will think we're wacky.
Not flower bulbs, light bulbs.
Come on, Dad. Lumens tell you how bright the bulb is. We can replace our 60-watt bulbs with energy-saving bulbs that give off about 800 lumens.
So, we'll save money.
Right.
Got it. 800 lumens and more savings.
Lumens, the new way to shop for light. Learn more at energysavers.gov.